Hey, this is Samir Gadia. I'm the lead singer of Young the Giant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with singer, artist, and performer, Samir Gadia. Stay tuned. As always, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening and watching and subscribing to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, and sharing it with your friends, and for following along on social media. Now, if you're enjoying these conversations, thanks also for taking a moment to submit a kind rating and review, as it's greatly appreciated. I've been thinking a lot recently of how for some of the art and expression that I really enjoy, there's a construct that starts with the beginning, has a middle, maybe even a conflict to resolve, and definitely an ending. Sometimes that ending leads to more questions and leaves me both longing to continue the search and equally at peace. But I figure it's this meandering journey that we love, whether we're experiencing it on our own or as a group. For musician, singer, and artist Samir Gadia, this journey has taken on many formats, leading to a fair amount of personal and artistic discovery, and especially for listeners and fans, a journey that many are enjoying. Samir is the lead singer for the band Young the Giant, and grew up as an Indian American in Michigan and then in Southern California with several of his bandmates who were also children of immigrants. Like many of us, he was surrounded with Indian culture and music and stories, and found himself going to Stanford before launching with full energy to answer that internal yearning for art and music. As the frontman and lead singer for Young the Giant for almost 20 years now, Samir's journey has been one that's evolved through many successful hits and studio albums, an independent label, and a series in partnership with SiriusXM, which you should please check out, called Point of Origin. It spotlights emerging artists of color in an effort to disrupt and challenge the homogeneity of Western alternative and indie rock music. More recently, at the core of these expressions has been the exploration of identity, with the band finding themselves in more nuanced ways with each successive album, and Samir's latest brainchild project for Young the Giant to harmonize his own story as inspired by the Mahabharata, with last year's release of the album American Bollywood. Most recently, he's been on tour, performing both in the US and Europe, and so we caught up to talk about everything from parenthood and performing to that notion of feeling at home, and even about collaboration and teamwork. But we started by talking especially about what it's meant to be on tour and whether he feels that there's almost an anatomy to each of his performances.
Absolutely. I mean, even just with you know, the set list, even creating that process, it really is a living thing. And with each record that we release, now we've released five albums, to be able to do that for 90 minutes, just within that, it's almost a puzzle. It's trying to figure out what is the right act format. And even this last tour, we were doing it in four acts. And it's actually, the record was, it's off for American Bollywood, which is our fifth album. And it's, you know, loosely based on the four act structure of the Mahabharata. So that took a lot of work, and there's a lot of intention even before we even got on tour. You know, so there's a lot of rehearsal, production, creation. And as you get into the nitty gritty of tour, let's say it's the 20th show and you're starting to feel a groove. Even then, yeah, there's most definitely an anatomy. I mean, just leading up to the show, how you prepare your body, what mentally, physically has gone on during the day over the course of the tour that has led you to that point. And then the rapport that you have with the audience, there is a different cultural difference in each city, and not even just in each city. It's the architecture of the space and the venue informs so much of how people react. You know, for example, you know, I always talk about Denver as I would say, for, you know, diplomatically, a very like respectful audience. They tend to be more somber, you know, kind of just contemplative. But when you go play Red Rocks, it changes the dynamic entirely, and you have people traveling also from around the world to come there. But that space informs this kind of exuberance that isn't normally there in Denver. So, and it changes also over the course of every tour, you know, and it's like how your music has been consumed into the bloodstream of that particular place. And you only realize it once you're on the ground there. You see, oh, that's weird. That song in particular has really successful this time. I wonder what happened, you know, between now and then that has led to that, you know.
Do you and your bandmates ever walk away from the exact same show with completely different vibes from, you know, what that performance was, or even the complexion of the audience and how you walk away with that?
Yeah, most definitely. I think what makes us good and obviously professional is that we have a relative level of consistency. So
yeah,
it's not like there's one night where it's completely off and then the other person is completely tone deaf and they're just like, oh, that was great. You know,
yeah.
For the most part, it falls within a very small like range. And I think it's very, you know, consistent. Our shows are very consistent. But yeah, there are nights where, you know, my favorite show would be maybe even a show that isn't, you know, on paper the most exciting, or maybe we didn't even play the best. But for some reason, the performance and the way that I brought the crowd into the story, the way that I felt like that fell, it can be an entirely different experience from another musician, band who might be like, you know what, that crowd was kind of strange tonight. So that does happen. Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, particularly for you as a parent now, at the end of your shows, and I mean, boy, just without the performance that you must be on that exhaustion level, but, you know, at the end of a performance, is it somewhat akin to the end of the day for you as a parent?
Yes and no, because there's a level of adrenaline that comes into the system after a show. And it's an interesting thing. I think even medically, I've been doing this for so much of my adult life that my brain almost tricks my, like, I almost, even when I'm at home and it's like, let's say I've been on the road for a long time, there's this weird thing that switches where around 10 p.m. I get this burst of energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and I either fall asleep between 8 or 9 and right. It's done, or like I'm up until 2 in the morning after 10 p.m. Because on, you know, on tour, there is a huge level of adrenaline that comes in. And, yeah. You know, the other half of the job is, you know, meeting people, being the host. And then the bus only moves at 2 or 3 in the morning. So it's a different experience, and but equally exhausting.
Do you, and so in a way, I mean, I remember those days for sure, like, you know, trying to get the kids to bed and you sort of like get that nap in when you're exhausted around 8 o'clock, and then boom, 9 or 10 o'clock and you're up and ready to start doing your thing or whatever that might be. But, you know, in a way, because you've been doing this for so long, has the solace and the comfort and the adrenaline, for that matter, changed at all for you? Meaning that, do you find this in different venues now than even unexpected venues than you did perhaps at the beginning of your career? So maybe finding that solace or even that comfort or that adrenaline differently on stage or in the studio. And in a way, because you've been performing so much, does this also play a little bit to who you are as a person? I mean, does the performance play to the extrovert in you, or does it actually test the introvert in you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've found that almost because of tour, there are two parts of my personality that have been in some way cleaved from one another. And I'm actually working to try and bring them back together a little bit more. When I'm not on stage, even in social settings, unless I'm very, very comfortable with a specific group of people, I'm very quiet. I'm observant. I don't like being the center of attention. I don't like birthday parties. I don't like that are for me. I don't like any party related to me or me being in the center of anything. I hate karaoke. I don't like even performing for 5 people. Sometimes it makes me really nervous. And, you know, now in preschool with a whole new group of parents and stuff, some of whom are very social people. I'm pretty shy and awkward. but, you know, when I'm on stage, that person, the one who can really sway 50,000 people and tell a story and not feel any bit of nervousness, I think I'm kind of trying to find parts of that person in my daily life, but I'm also trying to find bits of that reserve and peace and calm after a show or towards the end of a show, and trying to bring those things into harmony. And as I've gotten older, I think I just have a lot more control on stage. I think before I was maybe a little bit, obviously there were some nerves that would go in there. There's some level of what posturing would be, what I'm supposed to be on stage. And now I think I've kind of completely thrown that all away. And I'm just, you know, this unadulterated self of kind of emotion and energy on stage. And I can access that whenever.
You know, it takes a lot to actually be self-reflective of that. I mean, has that been a surprise to you that there is, you know, some at least level of wanting to integrate that? I mean, some people, they particularly want to keep those two sort of places separate, right? There's, you know, I want my inner quiet. I want that quiet spot. And then I want to be a different person on stage or in a performance. Have you found that surprising to want to integrate that more?
Yeah, it's surprising. I think it's been a recent thing. I think maybe also just with parenthood, it's a very, you know, complicated subject, but you know, obviously, as you know, that you're trying to overcome certain cycles and certain things. And I don't want to be the serious person. I'm not inherently a serious person. Sometimes I can be when I'm, you know, not around my job. I would like to bring some levity to that. I think that that's a big factor. But at the same time, it's also, you know, being social with new people. There's going to be a new era now. I realize that I'm going to make a lot of new friends now because of my kids and who they hang out with. And I want to feel comfortable with them. And I don't want to feel this like general level of social anxiety.
Yeah.
So I think it comes to that as well. And I think also just figuring out how to make this all more sustainable for myself. So I can be doing this in 10, 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of learning to happen, right? That as you're going through it as a parent, as you're going through it as a professional, going through it, even from the business side of things. But there is also layers of being guarded and feeling, you know, private and not necessarily wanting those worlds to merge. For you as an artist, your band, you've gone through many kind of reincarnations, if you will, no pun intended, by the way, with this. I'm so curious, each time you make a recording, and maybe particularly with American Bollywood, but, you know, what do you perhaps have to unlearn as you go from recording to recording, or even project to project for that matter?
I mean, there's so much. I mean, I think we really try and deconstruct all of it. And maybe we don't do it as formally as one would maybe, let's say, you know, at a board meeting or something like that, where you have a project, you have something that was out in the world, and then you, you know, discuss, okay, what worked, what didn't work. We've kind of all internalized that just by this sense of being able to test it every night to the audience. And now with time and separation, seeing what worked, what didn't work, there's a lot of unthinking, a lot of rethinking. Then that a lot falls on me as the singer. In some way, my job is to try and get people to, you know, do the best work that they can. So, you know, from American Bollywood, which the intent of it was to just be ambitious and wild and worry about how we were going to play it live later, I think, you know, even that in itself, there are elements of that that work. And there are some elements where we're, you know, we just want to try something a little bit less serious, maybe a little less like constructed. And we just kind of get in a room and record live together. But it's a crazy, strange organism writing a record. And it's very exhausting too.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, let's come back to our conversation with Samir Gadia. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Lily Singh, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi, I'm Utkarsh Ambudkar, and you are listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with the lead singer of Young the Giant, Samir Gadia.
You know, I imagine that the tinkering part happens on stage and in performance and even in practice or rehearsal, but I'm always curious about one thing. How do you know when a song is done?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's a, you know, it's like a painting. I think one thing that one of the best descriptions I heard is, you know, when you feel like the lyrics, that you're saying everything that needs to be said, then this song is done. Obviously, when it comes to sonics and things like that, you can go really far. And for us almost as a band, one of our issues is, yeah, is trying to pull back a little sooner, because all of us are perfectionists and we like everything to be perfect. But that's a lot of unthinking for me, just being, you know, going to Stanford, and part of me very type A, you know, many of the other guys too. And they just coincidentally all a lot of immigrants. we were like told that this is the way that we need to do things in order to survive this world. We have to be pragmatic. We have to be organized. We have to do things in the right way and work really hard, and harder than maybe most people. But now we have to unthink that a little bit. Music doesn't work under those guidelines. So, you know, maybe it's actually okay if the guitar is a little out of tune, or if there's a little error here, because that brings some level of uniqueness to the recording. So that's always a challenge for us.
You know, I wonder if that comes also as you perhaps gracefully age as an artist, or as you evolve. I mean, have you come to a place where you accept those imperfections, not because it's any less of a mark of your drive or ambition, but more just the idea of being far more content with your work?
I don't know. You know, it's weird. I think they're a thing that draws me and propels me forward. And I wish it wasn't this way. I guess many people would think that I'm, you know, very content with artistically with what I've done. And in truth, there's always just a level of chaos, and I'm dealing with this very critical person in my head who's telling me that everything I've created is horrible. So, I think that's the artist's brain. And I think, for me, it's almost like, I think the imperfection is what makes a recording great, as opposed to, you know, just being like, oh, you know, I'm okay with letting this slider, showing people more a part of myself. I think that honesty comes into it, right? You know, like you have to be prepared to just be completely honest and unadulterated when you're recording. And I think with modern technology, just so much easier to sound perfect. Yeah. And I think in the short term, people really do like that. I think our taste has changed to enjoy that. But I do believe still in the timelessness of recordings, and that when you have something that feels real and lived in, it's the only thing at the end of the day that's going to separate us from AI, you know, in the next coming years. So, you know, just kind of leaning into that a little bit more.
Does that make you trust and have that much more confidence as you've been able to iterate that much more with your band as a group? Almost like showcase a little bit more of what your team talents are, as opposed to just like the, you know, just sort of the individual parts, and maybe that rawness comes from that sum of each individual part?
Absolutely. You know, I think a big part of this is trusting everyone. Like I said too, you know, I'm just from the way I was raised, I'm a control freak. I like having control of everything.
Yeah.
I think I've tried to assert more and more control. American Bollywood kind of being the apex of that, right? It's my story. Brought a lot of the songs in, brought a lot of the sonics in. I was very intentional about how I wanted things to be. And luckily the band really supported me and fell into that concept of what I thought. But now, you know, this new record, it's my personal thing is to not be as precious anymore, to let go of like entitlement or ego or this feeling. And so that means really, truly, and I'm even in that, those moments of like being like, oh, I need to control everything. The guys are so talented that they always surprise me, you know, by their just sheer talent and their ability to do things that I would have never thought of. So it makes my job easier and less stressful if I can just relinquish some control and be able to, you know, let them do their thing a little bit more.
That's got to be, I mean, a constant push-pull experience, right? That you know, you're sort of having this argument in your head, whether you actually intervene or just listen and, you know, relax. Does that mean that, you know, forthcoming Italian-American experiences or Jewish-American experiences or Persian-American experience albums are on the way?
You know, I'm not ruling out that possibility. And I would love to have other people do the thing. But I think, you know, for me, the spawn of this record was just, you know, I'm a big songwriting element in this group. And this story was something that I had to tell. And I was working on the record already. And I was like, it was going to be a solo record. So I was like, okay, well, if you guys want to be a part of this, then let's do it. But yeah, I mean, in the future, who knows? We, you know, right. We kind of fall into themes. And I think it'll be something maybe not as, I don't know, maybe not as specific to us. You know, we'll just have to see. We'll have to see where things go.
Sure. I mean, that's the beauty of a group or a family, that, like, you know, the water flows where it flows. And hopefully that can be pretty organic. I have to thank you, by the way. I mean, I never thought I'd hear the word or the name Vyas in an American song. So super kudos for that. You know, your backstory is so many of our backstories, right? I mean, we have some things in common. We both grew up in Southern California, probably both read Amar Chitra Katha and had our grandparents, you know, telling us stories and speaking different languages in the house, and lots of Indian music as a big sort of influencer. So this is all relatively familiar. So if you were to say, you know, hey, I made this wonderful opus reflecting the Mahabharata, I would say, well, absolutely, of course you did, right? Because it's certainly a mirror to who I am. But for those whose experiences aren't the same, and for those who are coming at this as, you know, Samir's experience, kind of a window into his world as opposed to a mirror, you just heard my reaction to this, but what's the more common reaction that you get from people who are coming at this from that window perspective?
Yeah, it's been a very interesting tour, I'll tell you that, because, you know, really the way you get to see it and interface with the most of the fans who've listened to the record is after the show, before the show, how people react to the songs. What I've seen, you know, a lot, obviously the Indian American, this is tailored to the Indian American experience, right? So like people like you and I, it's really like a shot of, okay, well, maybe let's not worry about appeasing everyone. Let's just put a capsule into space so that, you know, people can see what our reality is and even dive into the nuance of what that can be. And then I think for a lot of first generation Americans or first generation from wherever, there's also a chord there. And you don't have to be Indian American. I think it's the concept of creating a new home for yourself that you didn't have before. And then for the real layman or someone who is not an immigrant, let's say from the last few generations, is a casual fan, let's say from Birmingham, Alabama, I truly still believe, even though I'm putting that time capsule up there, I still believe in universality of music. I believe in the power of a well-written song to incept an idea. And so it was an interesting experience because I was almost like workshopping my life. Like how can I, what is the elevator pitch for my life? What does this mean? What does my life mean? And I think it is really this universal search for belonging and for feeling home. And finding a place to call home. And once we got onto that concept, and this is something I've been working on for a long time, then we brought that into a visual experience on tour. We had mini films that were playing before each act that kind of dovetailed with our whole discography, you know, and how we realized that even consciously or subconsciously, the search for home or leaving home has always been a huge element of Young the Giant from the first record. Only looking back now into through this new lens, does that make sense? And so then when you put that out there, I think it's much easier for people to understand what you're talking about. But at the same time, you know, you're out there and you're like the only Indian person for miles, and you sometimes do wish, you know, I wish I could get that level of like nuanced understanding and criticism that maybe some other cultures have had the ability to have in America. But this is the goal, right? This is the step there that, you know, maybe people will understand this more later. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you talk about feeling at home and having that same sort of like sense and sensibility. The line from the album on the walk home where you're asking someone walk me home, was this almost necessary for you? Like you mentioned, like you were going to do this as a solo project. But as you've grown as an artist and as Young the Giant has evolved from those first few albums and now here and now releasing a live album, does the work and artistic expression, you know, truly feel like you're finding home that much more? I mean, is that really the goal going forward, or has it kind of always been there? It's just now you've been able to articulate it this way and express it this way.
Yeah, I feel like we've been able to articulate it in much finer point. And yeah, the process of making music, I want to continue to take that mantra forward, you know, because it's so easy when you're in the studio to get caught up in the minutia of things, but to really think about that larger picture and what I think we represent, and what we can continue to represent, you know. And it is a group project, and it, you know, music becomes art and when people, you know, can all experience it together, when it's actually out in the world, then it becomes something like multidimensional. And I was having a debate about this, you know, with an artist friend, and he believes completely that art is only there when it's perceived by someone. I think there's a gray area. You know, art can be art in like a forest and no one sees it, and it can still be art, but if it becomes a part of the culture and conversation, that's the ultimate goal, right? That's our goal, at least. So we want to continue to, you know, bring that forward.
Do you have, perhaps because there's this compelling feeling of finding home, someone walking you home, if you will, and this notion of what art necessarily means in that context, do you have a different view of what success means now versus when you first started? Or even how you sort of measure whether something, your own artistic expression is in fact successful?
Absolutely. You know, and like I said, I kind of struggle with my own criticisms, and I think so much so, I think people would be very surprised. And I think this is universal. I think they're obviously the loudest out there they think they're the best, coolest thing, awesome, most thing ever.
Yeah.
You've
got Riz.
Yes.
As they say.
Yes, exactly. They've got the Riz. And for me, I think really serious about the craft, about art, and also just like plagued with my own inner demons, I think that goalpost is always changing. And it used to be not necessarily for the better. I think it was just an arbitrary thing. As humans, you know, when you reach a goal, then you're like, okay, well, what's the next goal? And I found myself doing that all the time. I think now my goals, obviously, with having children are different. You know, I don't necessarily just want to give it all away, do everything that I can to become the biggest artist in the world. I was already not willing to do that artistically. I think Young the Giant has carved a path for ourselves without having to play the game, let's say, that other artists are playing. I'm very proud of the fact that and not necessarily because we think it's lame, I think it's fine, just we haven't had it. We don't really have features. We don't really have other people writing our songs. You know, we do it all in-house. And I think
it's on your own label.
It's on our own label now, especially. So, you know, those terms have been set, I think, for a while. But at least, you know, for me now, I'm not going to go just say yes to everything just because. And I want to be able to have a work-life balance. And I want to be able to support my family and continue to say that Young the Giant is doing something for good, for the good of humanity.
Yeah, no. And I mean, you know, maintaining and integrating that into your ongoing work is always a challenge. You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with artist, singer, and performer Samir Gadia. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Cal Penn. I'm an actor, author, former public servant, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tam France.
Hi, guys. I'm Ananya Pandey.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Hi there. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Samir Gadia. I'm curious about Point of Origin for a second. I mean, that project always has fascinated me in the sense of spotlighting that homogeneity, right, of some components of the industry. And, you know, whether you call it the alt-rock or indie rock genre, or even whether you how you classify it is maybe a different point. But I'm curious how recognizing those artists and showcasing them and creating those playlists has in fact accelerated your own learnings and decision making. And maybe not just as an artist, but actually with the business of this art.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for one, even just being continuously inspired by young, new artists who are doing really great things is never a bad thing. I think, you know, many artists and human beings in general, we just kind of stop discovering new things. Musically, artistically, maybe educationally, we kind of close ourselves off to opportunities because we, you know, we're used to kind of our little pond and we don't really want to venture much further out from there. And so even just the sheer ability of being inspired by others is great. I think there's a bit of excitement too that, you know, you're building a community and interfacing with a new generation of musician who is aware of us. And you can almost place yourself in the historical context of what is happening right now in alternative music. I think a lot of it's just very fascinating to me. I think music is still, we are in a post-genre world. Music has become influenced by all different genres, but we've kind of taken the classifications of a genre almost to as euphemisms just to classify the type of people who are making it. And, you know, that kind of was always the case. You know, like even you think about the term urban music, you know, is just such a euphemism. And that's continued to happen. So I do believe that there's something very interesting to be said there. And I'm excited for where Point of Origin is going to go this year. I'm like trying to get a podcast underway, and I'm like locked in some amazing artists, some of whom are like not necessarily brand new artists, but well-known artists. Like we're having Brittany Howard in February. And I'm really excited for these conversations.
You know, you mentioned the idea of, you know, euphemisms for genres and even just like the people who are making these music, making this music. But I'm wondering also, I mean, as you have had this pretty profound, now long journey, right, from Irvine High to the Jakes to Cough Syrup and you know, all the iterations there, are you also more cognizant of not only these artists and the, you know, the descriptions of who's making the music, but also the description perhaps of who they're making the music for? Mm-hmm. And is that actually blurring that much more too? Is it important for that matter for us to not necessarily have an audience in mind when we're actually making the art?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think in general, you know, it's important to, you know, the first record or the first body of music, I think any artist would say is it's a interior necessity. It's something that needs to be done and described. And otherwise, you know, that artist would maybe go insane. It's an imperative, and it's a hope that, okay, maybe this does find an audience. That's great. And if not, then that's the way things are. And I think that obviously there's a hot button issue with, you know, what is a content creator versus what is an artist. And I think that is the delineation. I don't think that I'm not reserving judgment for, you know, a content creator, but the content creator's goal is to think of the audience first and then create the thing. The reverse engineering, that's like they're marketing something to them.
Yeah.
Right. And that is what is working. within the industry. So there are many, many people out there who I would consider content creators. And then you have the artist, and it's becoming much more economically impossible to be an artist. So I don't blame up-and-coming artists for being content creators. But we need to figure out a system to reward artists because the money is there. You know, Spotify, the labels, they're reporting like record earnings, right? And there's no one really talking about it, but it's kind of really negatively affecting music. So there's obviously that concept. And when it comes to, you know, who's making the music, I was very lucky to be in a part of time where I was, you know, MTV had just happened, the MTV generation, where it really was, once again, in the 90s, like, what did you look like? You know, were you interesting looking? Were you super beautiful? Were you very handsome? Were you this striking picture of what an American man should be or a British man should be? We skipped that part, you know, and so we went into a space where there was a large audience in the radio that didn't even know what you look like. And I think there's something very powerful about that, not to hide from who I am, but you have this subversive value, right, to someone.
Well, and there's no data. You listen to K-Rock in Southern California. There's no data behind that. That's like tracking, yes, this is the demographic, 17-year-old straight white male or Riverside gay African-American who's listened to your music.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that, and that goes both ways. You know, I think now there are artists, and the artists have become more and more segregated because you have artists who, let's say, look a certain way, and they're never going to reach that fan in America. And that sucks, obviously. And I wish that that could change. But at this point, I don't see it changing. We had this ability to literally like Trojan horse people into Young the Giant, right? And I have fans who are, you know, would never have maybe come to a show about the Indian American experience had they not been fans of Young the Giant from the beginning. And I had so many people tell me, you know, yeah, they didn't know what they thought I was a British guy just by my voice, you know, or just some guy. And to them, some guy is some white guy. And I think that there's an interesting quality to that. And I don't know if that's going to happen anymore. And so then you begin to just only live within an echo chamber, you know, whereas I have the ability to have a conversation with people and incept them into ideas that they normally wouldn't be open to.
Yeah. And develop relationships, right? So that it's an ongoing relationship, not just with your audience that's in front of you for a performance, but hopefully the folks who are streaming your music and developing a relationship with you and Young the Giant. There's a line on Commotion that says, I'm only happy when I'm looking in. And I was thinking about that, you know, for someone who's, you know, a lead singer, a front man, there's a relative juxtaposition because, you know, for you, you are the face of your band often for many listeners and for many people who are looking from the outside in. What's all of this taught you, perhaps, as someone who's a front man, as someone who's a lead singer, about sharing? And about collaboration and about teamwork, you know, when you are also trying to not just be someone who's thoughtful and listening, but in some ways, you know, be the director, if you will.
Yeah, it's been a unique journey in leadership. I think I would call myself a reluctant leader. I was never craving that, but I was, you know, foisted upon those, you know, just happened to be what my job is now. And I think that's what makes a good leader, because it's a thoughtful one. And I think for me, it's almost like I always did know how to be able to delegate and how to be mediator and how to bring people together. But I found myself almost losing sense of my imperatives and my goals what my inclinations were, because I was trying to be as caring and as understanding of other people's feelings while pushing mine down. And I think, you know, with that line, I'm only happy when I'm looking in. It's just at least checking in, having an awareness of my needs as a human being. I think one would think with, you know, traditionally as a lead singer that I would be that guy who's just like, look at me, I need the center of attention. I feel very uncomfortable in those positions. And I've learned to now take it with a little bit more grace and be okay knowing that, hey, you know what? It's okay sometimes to be the center of this. And so, you know, and I've learned that, but I think it's always been there an important thing, even with this record, even being controlling, to bring people in and to have their viewpoints and to have them enrich the experience, because a band is, you know, greater than the sum of its individual parts. I truly believe that.
It's almost the, you know, it's definitely the Gujarati invite everyone under the tent at Dandiya Ras kind of experience, right?
Yes.
Let me get you out of here on this. I mean, you're not the first and certainly hopefully not the last to represent the sort of Indian and South Asian diaspora in Western music. But for those who maybe are getting to experience your music and get introduced to Young the Giant for the very first time, they're watching you perform for the very first time, maybe at a concert, how do you hope they feel? And maybe what questions do you hope they're asking as they leave from those experiences?
I hope they feel that they belong there, that this is a place that they can call home. In some ways, I want it to feel like a spiritual journey to, you know, go through the things within one's own life, maybe, but to also question deeply held beliefs, maybe, or to just enjoy, to have a good time, to not think so much, and not be stressed out, and just enjoy the company of like-minded people, or, you know, just even someone who's not like you next to you, and enjoy the show. Maybe spiritual is a bit much, but I want it to feel like a journey. I want people to, I'm not hot water music. We're not background music. We're headphone music. And in a live space, you know, you can all enjoy that together.
Well, I know that lots of people are enjoying it, and hopefully they're discovering and rediscovering it. We got through this, Samir. I don't know if it was framed in the format of an origin, an exile, a battle, and a denouement, but we made it. So,
yes.
Samir, thank you so much for joining, and I hope we can revisit with you again down the road.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Abe. And let's keep in touch.
Thanks so much, Samir. Young the Giant has a live compilation album streaming everywhere now, so please check it out. You can also find all episodes of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing wherever you listen or watch your podcasts. And thanks again for listening. Hope everyone has a new year that's filled with peace and health. Until next time, I'm Abhay Darndegar.